If you're a parent, you're going to take away so much from this episode. And even if you aren't a parent, this episode is still full of great information for you too. Today's guest holds a Master of Science in Nutrition and Dietetics, is a registered dietitian, certified detox specialist, master herbalist, Lyme specialist, and mental health specialist. Based in New York, she is a proud owner of Biomedical Healing for Kids, a virtual private practice. On this episode, we discuss her personal experience of her son regressing and being diagnosed with level 2 autism at 19 months old. After years of gaining little to no progress, she took matters into her own hands and began to completely change the trajectory for her son, who is now verbal, doing amazing in school, sports, and living a completely normal childhood. Welcome to the show, Greer McGinnis.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And I know you're in Long Island, right?
Yeah.
So what's the weather like there? Because here it's been 80 something all week and it's freezing today. So I'm like in my sweatshirt today, hunkered down.
We had like one nice day last week. It was like 70 and now we're back down to like 55, 56 degrees. I'm like, all right, I'm over it.
Yeah. So this is like a bipolar time of year for you there too.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't love it. I am like, I'm a sunshine girl. So if I could, you know, one day move to like a southern state, that's where I'm headed.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know it's like, especially like in New York, we have such like wonky weather, like bipolar, like it's like up, down, up, down, up, down, especially in between like April and May. So
yeah, oh, I don't love it. Like I said, we have so much to unpack, like we were talking about right before we started recording, as I'm super excited to have you on and really just dive into everything that you have to share. So when your son was diagnosed, were you already a dietitian, a detox specialist, and an herbalist, or did that come?
Yeah. I was a dietitian, yes.
Okay.
I was a conventional Western medicine trained dietitian. I had been a dietitian for roughly, I think, about five years or so at that point, when I was pregnant and had my son. But I was not in functional medicine until he did regress, and that was around the age of 2.
Okay. So can you take us into that a little bit of, your experience of him at that time that he regressed, you know, what he was going through, and then also your experience of doctors, therapists, specialists, kind of like what they were telling you at that time, which then made you want to become, like you said, more into functional health and the herbalist and detox specialist.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, when Keegan was born, you know, I didn't have the greatest pregnancy and, you know, but there were no like, you know, questionable issues. Like, I was a healthy person, you know, being pregnant. He was born healthy, you know, Apgar score was perfect. Like, I mean, he was always tiny. You know, my husband and I are not big people. I'm 5'4", he's 5'7". And, you know, when I looked at my husband's like growth chart and like his growth, he was pretty much like neck and neck. I mean, they were identical. So there really wasn't any concern or issues for me until my pediatrician was like around 9 months. She's like, you know, I just want him to gain more weight. Like, I just want to rule out if there's, and I said, well, he's pretty much on par with my husband. Like, you know, like I didn't, you know, think anything of it really, you know? So I actually, you know, she told me, you know, go through early intervention because then you can get like free assessments and stuff. And if it is, then it'll be covered. You don't have to pay out of pocket. So I actually had Keegan assessed at 9 months and 15 months for, you know, anything, any type of oral motor issues, swallowing issue, like anything that, like, you know, just to cover my basis to say like, hey, like, and he was a happy baby. I mean, he ate, slept, pooped, peed, like, you know, like there were, he was like the dream baby. Like he really was. Like there were no, you know, he just was a slow grower. Mm-hmm. And I had a speech therapist and an occupational therapist both at 9 months and 15 months come and evaluate him. And they were like, you know, there's nothing here. Like there were no red signs. There were no red flags. They didn't even bring up autism. Like it was just like, you know, maybe just, you know, go to GI, rule out, you know, celiac or, you know, thyroid issues and stuff. And we did all that and everything came back fine. And so I just was like, you know, I know it's not a GI issue because he's pooping well. Like there, you know, he wasn't gassy. His stomach wasn't bloated and stuff. Like there were no, like, you know, again, red flags for me as a clinician either. And then between the ages of 1 and 2, Keegan had a ton of ear infections. And of course, being Western medicine trained, it was put him on antibiotics. So he had multiple rounds of antibiotics between the ages of 1 and 2, you know, just doing all the wrong things to me. Now, when I look back, you know, I could have fed him better, worked on his nutrition. And then there was a point in time where around 19 months, you know, I had a babysitter while I was working. My husband and I both worked and I had a babysitter, and it was a Friday night, and I'll remember she called me and she said, you know, Greer, you know, Keegan hasn't said a single word all week. He stopped calling me Monica. He stopped talking, like he would talk to the dogs and stuff. And I know, and I was a first time mom. I was working like 50, 60 hours a week traveling and stuff. And, you know, I just chalked it up to, he wasn't talking at night because he was so tired. You know, I didn't think anything of it.
And so he was fully verbal and then went to nonverbal.
Yeah, I have videos that I posted on my Instagram that I found of him actually talking to the dog at like 15 months. He was like, hey, stay, stop it. Like, you know, like he was talking to the dog, like interacting, pointing and stuff like that. His first words were baby at 9 months. You know, he had phrases like ready, set, go, or where is it? There it is. You know, like he had words and communication. He was pointing, and he would actually play, like, you know, interactive, perfect, you know, play like a kid should be, until that week that he regressed. And that weekend, I remember like just literally sitting on the couch observing and watching him that whole entire weekend. And all he wanted to do was watch Mickey Mouse. He pulled a bucket, like a tub bucket, and like sat in the bucket and would just scream like from morning to night. If I didn't see this happening, I would have never believed it in a million years. It was the fact that, like, I just watched my healthy son go from being able to talk, point, you know, communicate, look at me, call me mom, and then all of a sudden to sitting in a bucket within a week and just scream if I didn't have Mickey Mouse on, or and having meltdowns and tantrums. I was like, what just happened to my kid? I called that speech therapist that came to the house twice that Monday. And I said, you know, cause he gave me his card. He said, listen, if you know, you need me, like, just call me if you have any questions, you know, in the future. And I called him to let him know. He's like, we need to see him like now. And early intervention came in and they said he meets the criteria now for moderate autism. And I was like, what just happened? Like, it felt like a gut punch. Like, I'm like, you guys came twice. Like they were like, listen, we don't know what happened. Like but we're just looking and observing, like right now, like we're not the specialist. Like you'd have to go to a developmental pediatrician. And that was like a 6-month wait to go to this professional developmental pediatrician to tell me after a horrible 1-hour appointment that was absolutely horrendous. Mm-hmm. That she's like, yeah, your son has moderate autism. Here's some handouts. We'll see you back in like 9 months. And I'm like, I had like my list of questions. Like, why did this happen? Why is he screaming all the time? Like, and she just kept going, I don't know. This is just how autism presents itself. Like, and I'm like sitting there going, you're the specialist. Like, you're supposed to be like.
Yeah. Like, what a helpless feeling as a mother, as a first time mother, especially, like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was. It like I said, it was a gut punch. Like I literally left the appointment and like my husband and I just found out I was about 7 weeks pregnant. And like, as soon as I was leaving, she was like, oh, you know, you might want to just go get genetic testing done to make sure in case you have any more children that this isn't genetic. And I'm like crying, you know, right. Like my husband got in the car. We were just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Oh like, my gosh.
Never in my wild, like, I was mortified. I was mortified at her. I was mortified at the system. I even took him to another hospital called Children's Cohen's to do a separate evaluation because I wasn't thrilled with her. I mean, she didn't even look at him. Like, she like listened to his heart and just did an intake and then was like, okay, your son has moderate autism. And I was like, how do you know? She's like, I'm just guessing. It's just my feeling. And I was like, okay, well...
Wow.
I'm a scientist. I like numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's when I went to Children Cohen's and they did it the correct way. They did two separate individual visits, one with mom, one with dad, 2 weeks apart. And they actually did an ADOS test with him. And then they both concluded that he still had what they considered moderate or level 2 autism.
Oh my. Wow. So at this point, you're basically everyone that you're seeing, you know, in as a professional is telling you, this is just autism. This is just how it is, you know, and you're
the new autism in quotations, the new autism is regressive autism. This is how it presents now.
Wow. Yeah. So let's start where you were at what point you decided to then start taking matters into your own hands.
Yeah. So, you know, the problem was being a first-time mom, being a clinician, everyone, especially, you know, my husband was like, listen, you got to take yourself out of this equation. Like, you need to be mom and not practitioner. And that I will regret doing because for, you know, 2 years, I just did what everyone told me to do. I just did the therapies. I mean, he was doing school half days. And now he started at 2.5 going to school on a bus. You know, talk about freaking out because your kid can't talk and tell you anything. Like, yeah. Luckily he was the last pickup and first drop off. So, and then the school was around the corner. So,
yeah.
But still, it was and he loved it. So thank gosh. But he was in school half days for 4 hours. He was getting over 20 hours of ABA therapy, speech therapy, and educational therapy. Then we had Saturday morning play groups. There was no time for anything. And we did that for a good year and a half. And then by the time he was like 4 and his baby brother was born, his baby brother was actually born with mouth ties, lip, tongue, cheek, buccal ties. He had 4 ties that had to be cut by the time he was 1 year old. And I actually had a lactation consultant because I was having a lot of trouble with breastfeeding and stuff because of his mouth ties. And she was a crunchy mom. And because she was a lactation consultant, mm-hmm. and she was like, you know, you should do some more digging. You know, we did the genetic testing with a geneticist and for Keegan, and everything came back normal. They called me. They're like, hey, everything's clean. And I'm like, I'm confused.
Yeah.
Now I'm very confused.
Right.
Because, you know, going to school, being trained, we were taught autism has a genetic abnormality component. There's either a deletion or what, you know, something is wrong. And they're developmentally delayed since birth. Like, they're not hitting their milestones. They don't talk, et cetera, et cetera. So now I'm even more confused. I'm like, okay, we regressed. Genetics is clean. What is going, like, I just, you know, I was so confused. And I had a friend who's a crunchy nurse. She was a nurse. She's a mom. You know, I didn't ever knew how crunchy she was. I just knew she made elderberry syrup. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my extent.
I love this term, crunchy mom.
You know, and she would, you know, she never pushed anything on me, but she would leave me breadcrumbs. And mm-hmm. she would just say, like, here, like, maybe join this Facebook group. I think there was like a lot of information I was reading about, and like, it started opening up the doors for me. So when Keegan was about 4, I started really, you know, researching more because it was getting to the point. Keegan was 4. His verbal behavioral assessment was like a 56, which means like completely verbally deficit. Like, you could take Keegan into a kitchen at 4. He couldn't even name a stove, a kitchen, a fork, a spoon, a plate. Like, he didn't know the names of them. Didn't hold a pen, couldn't write, couldn't do anything.
Wow.
So I joined some of these Facebook groups and they were talking about like gut health, and they were sharing like research studies, which I think is really what got me like my interest in, because, you know, moms can share whatever, but when you start sharing research and actual like information, I'm like, what, you know, and it was information that I'm like, why was this not told to me? Like, we're like, these moms are finding all this amazing research, and I'm sitting there going, I went to an expert and like zilch. So once I started around four and a half, within 6 weeks, Keegan picked up a pen and started writing his ABCs for the first time.
Whoa.
And I was like, my husband like looked at me, he's like, what did you do? Yeah. I don't know. I put him on some supplements.
Yeah, because it had been a couple years of just nothing you're hardly to no progress.
Yeah. And wow. Within 4 to 6 weeks, he started writing his ABCs. He actually spoke his first sentence and he just started communicating. And now he's like unstoppable. He's 10 now. And, you know, it was mind blowing to me because I was like sitting there going, you know, like, my husband's like, how did this happen? I said, I don't know. And within 6 months, his VB MAP score, which is that verbal behavioral assessment, went from a 56 to an 8. Wow. And I have that documented from the ABA therapist that I had coming in the home because we were paying privately because outside he didn't qualify for ABA therapy in the school district. So we did private ABA therapy in the home and I had him assessed that summer. It was all, I think it was like July, August, where his VB MAP score was a 56. And by December, it dropped to an 8.
Oh my gosh.
The lower the score, the more, you know, normal verbal you are. So it was like, they were like, what did you do? How did you do? And I was like, I hit the ground running and, you know, I left working in healthcare altogether and started working in functional medicine. I started working with functional lab companies, learning how to interpret functional labs for providers and, to other parents and stuff. And I just continued to work off that information and do deep dive research. And unfortunately, there's not a ton of information out there, or even when I was doing courses and classes, like, you know, and with herbals and stuff, like I wanted to take herbal courses because a lot of the functional medicines use herbs. And I wanted to make sure that I was doing it safely, especially for children, because there is no safety standards or people who really do this for parents and practitioners. So a lot of things I had to learn and like manipulate on my own to create because there just wasn't that information out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that brings me to talking a little bit more about things that you did start doing. And so I know one thing that you talk about a lot in your practice and on your social media is detoxing and toxins. So if you can dive into that a little bit, like what things you started maybe detoxing from him and things that were probably causing these delays.
Yeah. So I ran tests. So there's functional medicine tests for like stool tests and toxin testing, like heavy metals, mold, environmental toxins. And I ran them on him and then started looking at like what like the problem areas were. And one of the first things I started doing was like working on his gut function, you know, because he had tons of yeast overgrowth in his gut. Like he was a mess. Like his gut was just from so many antibiotics and not the greatest diet and things like that. He also carries the HLA-DQ2 genetic variant for celiac disease, which means he has like a 70% chance of developing celiac disease at some point in time in his life. So unfortunately, gluten like really does a number on his system and his gut, but he has ARFID, which is avoidant restrictive feeding intake disorder, which is a psychological disorder that can correlate with autism about food. Like he panics and freaks out if he doesn't get his like safe foods. So that's been a working progress. So getting him off of gluten, dairy, and things like that, getting rid of the yeast in his gut was like really like step one for us. And then slowly working on detoxing like heavy metals and environmental toxins that were just accumulating in his system and causing that disconnect between the brain and the mouth. It was, you know, what was interesting is like he had you know, he was smart. Like he could spell. Like this kid at 10 is like a crazy speller, but writing and stuff, like he's still like behind with like some of his writing and reading comprehension, which is fine because I kind of expected that, especially between COVID and stuff. He was like, you know, COVID hit when he was in like kindergarten through like second grade, which is foundational reading skills. So that really put a lot of kids behind too. But when we started doing the detoxing and things like heavy metals and stuff, like all of a sudden it was like a whole new world opened up for him and like the floodgates open. And once you started removing them, it was like, here, like, mm-hmm. this is, I was paying attention this whole time, but I just couldn't get the words out. And then all of a sudden he was able to communicate and start talking to us and just being able to tell us like how he feels or if something hurts. You know, when your kid is crying and they're nonverbal and you're like, what is wrong? And you're thinking of everything. It's really hard to navigate. So being able to like communicate with him. And like I said, he didn't start really talking till he was, you know, closer to 4.5, 5 and actually in full sentences, which was like, you know, people were like, what, like, wow, like just speech explosion.
Mm-hmm. And these are things that he, like you said, heavy metals, yeast overgrowth, like all these things are coming from foods, water, or what are these things that are that can cause this in a child's body?
So unfortunately, as moms, if we have mold, heavy metals and stuff, like I have amalgam filling still that passed on to Keegan, unfortunately, as well. So like moms pass on a lot of toxic burden to their children just in utero. It's like they've tested and found over 298 different types of chemicals in cord blood, which is insane. You know, kids, 100% wow. of kids are testing positive for forever chemicals, which are PFAS chemicals. So these chemicals that don't break down, they don't biodegrade, heavy metals don't break down, they don't biodegrade. So when we give birth, and even unfortunately sometimes with breastfeeding too, we do continue to pass on those toxins to kids from day one. Then as they're growing and they're developing, their bodies are so different than ours. They're for pound, they breathe in more air than we do. They drink more fluids than we do. They absorb more through their skin. So anything that's around, that's why lead could be such a damaging thing, especially in a home, because kids can actually absorb the lead from like just the air. So anything from your water supply, we have some of the worst water supplies in the United States that contain all different types of heavy metals.
Air I'm down quality. A rabbit hole with water right now. I'm like,
it's a rabbit hole.
My whole family thinks I'm nuts, but yeah, we're doing a huge reset on our water situation at my house. Yeah. So yeah.
My husband used to say, oh, we have very, really great water in Long Island. It's like, okay, the water supply that you're looking at in the big tanks mm-hmm. that they're testing, yes, they could be pretty decent to a certain degree. But the problem is once it leaves those water towers and it comes to your home, it's all the pipes.
Yes.
The pipes are the more of the problem than the actual water that we're getting it from to begin with, because the pipes are made with all different types of metals, including lead, aluminum, et cetera. So, tellurium, tin, you know, et cetera. Like there's just so much. So the tap water you're drinking or the water that you're bathing your kid, they're absorbing that. They're drinking that on a regular basis. And it's consistently being, you know, it's consistently toxic. Air quality, they've found like aluminum, strontium, and a couple other heavy metals, and air quality, especially depending on where you live. If you're in an area that has tons of golf courses and stuff, they're going to spray glyphosate and pesticides that have heavy metals in them. Even chemtrails and stuff have tons of heavy metals in them. So it's anything from water to air to your food. I mean, they've done tons of crazy posts about just heavy metals in baby food. And a lot of that just comes from the ground. I mean, it's not necessarily from the manufacturing themselves. It's actually from where they're getting the fruits, vegetables, and stuff to make the baby food. If the ground is contaminated with heavy metals, of course the food is going to be contaminated with heavy metals. So it's just kind of like this hamster wheel of constant exposure. We come in contact with up to like 800,000 toxins a day.
Oh my gosh, that's a crazy number.
Yeah.
I believe it
just
though.
When you step outside, the thing, I mean, just think about how much makeup we put on, especially women. We could do up to like 11 different types of things, mascara, makeup, et cetera. And all of those have different types of toxins in them, your body wash, shampoo, conditioner. Then you step outside. Now it's glyphosate, gas fumes, petroleum, you know, like perchlorate. Like it's just, it bombards you every single day, but we don't think about it because we don't see it.
Right. So in this environment that we live in these days, I mean, it is the times that we live in. We should probably be detoxing regularly then.
Yeah.
So how often would you recommend doing that?
So detox is like a way of life. So there's one of the things is, you know, when you see detoxes and they're like green smoothies or something, that's like bogus stuff. Like that's not, that's not real. That's fake. You know, there is a real term for detoxing in the medical world. And it's no different than if someone overdosed and we stick charcoal down their throat to absorb all the toxin chemicals. That's a detox, essentially. That's the same thing. So, you know, what we try to do and what I try to teach my families is my rebalance method, where it's basically working on the gut function, where we have to have a working gut. And that's the problem, is many times we don't know what's going on in our microbiome. So we just assume, and everyone says, oh, you have a liver and you have kidneys that will detox. Well, yeah, if your gut works and you're absorbing your nutrients and you're not nutrient deficient, your body's going to work. Yay. Mm. But if you're not, and things like, I mean, for instance, glyphosate we know can deteriorate the gut lining, and it impacts cytochrome P450, which is one of the first phases in the liver detoxification. It actually halts it from actually working. So getting, if you have those toxins in your system and you're not aware of like how things are functioning or your nutrient status, nothing's going to detox. Like you're going to be halted and just start accumulating those toxins. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get those symptoms of like toxic load coming from.
Right. Wow.
So detoxing is like more of like a way of lifestyle. Like you have to kind of avoid the toxin, like avoidance as much as you can. We want to try to minimize that exposure first. That's why we try to set up your home, make sure you have like air filtration, water filtration. We work on your products and your food and things like that. Just trying to control what we can control first. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do testing to see where you're at and what needs to be detoxed, because every toxin will be different in detoxification. So it's not just like, oh, take binders or zeolites and stuff. It really depends on what that person has in their system.
Yeah. And so I want to kind of go back to your son too, real quick, because you said he's now 10. He's mm-hmm. now fully verbal, and his progress is like off the charts, you know, from where he started at, you know, in this whole process. And so can you tell us like all the things that he is doing now? I know I've heard you on another yeah. podcast talk about he's playing sports. He's yeah. great at math. So is he still considered to be on the spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, I've never retested him yet. So in order to lose the diagnosis, I would have to get another ADOS test. And right now to get on a wait list is like 9 months or more. So I really don't want to take that appointment away from somebody else who really does need that appointment. Right now, he's still in a self-contained classroom, which is a small classroom, which works, and I don't want to change it. I'd rather him get more one-on-one support earlier on, and then hopefully when he gets older, he doesn't need it and he's not going to struggle. He was getting lost in those integrative classrooms because you have 24 kids, half have IEPs and half don't. And when I walked in there, I was overwhelmed and I was like, get me out. So I can only imagine for a kid, you know, who's still like behind a little bit, how that could be so overwhelming. But yeah, so he's in a small classroom. I think it's like what they call it, a 1-13-1. So like one special ed teacher, 13 to 14 kids, and one regular teacher in the classroom. So he gets a lot more support there. But yeah, he's mainstreamed for math. Like, so math, he like, you know, excels, like he doesn't really need any support. He can he loves to tell me that he's always the first one done to finish his tests and stuff. Like, it's like a race, and it's always and it's always accurate, which is like, we're always like, all right, why don't you slow down, re-look at it and stuff. And then he's like, yeah, but it's right.
Yeah. So, oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, he's like I said, he's still a little bit behind with reading comprehension and reading. I was too as a kid. Actually, I had word retrieval problems when I was a kiddo, but back then they used to hold us back. So I actually repeated the first grade twice because of my learning disability, because at that time we didn't have all the special education that we do today. So he's continued to grow. He's continued to make amazing progress and always meet his goals by the end of the year for his IEP, which is a beautiful thing. You know, so right now I have no problems with him being in the self-contained until, you know, because he's going to be going into fifth grade, and then sixth grade, he'll be going into the middle school. So I want to give him as much support before he goes more of a mainstream middle school. But yeah, he can communicate, he could talk, he could play video games. Like, I mean, he's like, you wouldn't know until you started talking to him that it's almost like talking to Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory. Yeah. A little bit, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we don't understand those social cues and stuff like that. He's a little quirky, but I love him to death. And yeah, he loves judo. He's doing amazing in judo. He's getting ready to get his yellow belt, which is super exciting. And yeah, so he has friends, he plays, you know, like I said, you wouldn't really know until you started talking to him a little bit that it's like, we just have like a little bit of gap space. But again, he's only 10 and we're still making progress constantly.
Yeah. And so that leads me to my next question, which is routine practices that you do every day still to make sure he doesn't regress. But along with that, like just things that you would recommend to all parents who may not have a child that is on the spectrum or was on the spectrum, you know, just little things that we can do as parents to make sure that our children are as healthy as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I usually start with like my four pillars, which is clean water, clean food, clean products, clean air. And the reason why is because that sets up your home. So if you have clean water supply, then we know that your kid's not constantly going to be storing more and more toxins. Clean air, because they spend up to 10 hours in their room a night for sleep. Let's make sure that they're not breathing in like fumes and stuff that they shouldn't be. Clean products, anything that they're brushing their teeth with, your wash, soap and stuff like that, and clean food, like really trying to get rid of the ultra processed food. It's like, you know, kids eat over almost like 70% ultra processed foods every single day. Like that's what makes
parents
up.
Are just like, oh, go, here's a little snack.
I mean, both parents have to work nowadays. Yeah. People are like trying to do like the clean, whatever's easiest and stuff, and I totally understand. But when we look, I mean, I had a big gripe with the principal the other day because I found out that their kids are getting Pop-Tarts, donuts, and Takis at lunch and breakfast, and I was like, what is going on here?
I hate Takis. My son, I don't know who introduced him to him, but he's always asking me for them, and I'm like, no. Just no.
Yeah. Listen, and if your kid, you know, I don't ever want to say like, you know, one of the things as being a dietitian, we are always scared about feeding culture for children. We don't want kids to have a feeding disorder or stuff like that. But we also want to teach them like foods like that are every once in a while. They're not an everyday thing. They're not a once a week thing. Like they need to be like a treat every once in a blue moon kind of thing. And that's okay. But, you know, when I look at the ingredients and stuff, the part of me is like, God, burn these. Mm-hmm. Like just like, get rid right. of them. But, you know, it's hard because especially for Keegan, who carries the genetic disorder for celiac, who has a 70% chance of developing celiac disease, you know, that's a significant severe issue that we have to work with him on and explain to him, you know, listen, like, I understand you want pizza like the rest of your friends from this pizzeria, but unfortunately, because of the way that you're, you know, celiac markers are coming back, we're getting closer and closer to that actually happening. And that's what we want to try to avoid as much as possible. It's hard. It really is hard with the amount of stuff that we have out there. Like these kids, I mean, even if I take my kids grocery shopping and we go to get our normal waffles, they'll see like the cool, like, Fruit Loop waffle. They're like, oh, look, it's pretty, it's cool, it's vibrant. Like, I want to get this. And I'm like, no, we don't, you know, that's not something that
yeah.
mommy wants in the house.
I know what I say to my kids is I'm like, when have I ever bought something like that? They're like, okay, I'll put it back. Like, they just already know I'm not about it. We'll do little things like Chick-fil-A, you know, sometimes or whatnot. But I explain to them, I'm like, hey, balance. Like, we had Chick-fil-A and now we're not going to have processed food.
Parents ask me this all the time, because many of the times our kids have to be like gluten, dairy, corn, soy free. That's like a lot of things. It's basically just living off of whole foods and, you know, nothing really too much processed, you know, and people are like, is this forever? And it's like, sometimes it is a forever thing and sometimes it's not. Like for me, I've done tons of work on, you know, my gut and detox and stuff. But if I eat anything that has corn and soy, I'm like a histamine reaction. Like it looks like I just stuffed my face in about a bowl of petals and now I have like watery eyes, runny nose and stuff, and it stinks because I love Thai food.
Yeah.
And I love sushi, but like if I eat it, I'm just like, you know, with any type of soy or anything, like I'm just like a hot mess. So, you know, sometimes kids can grow out of things. Sometimes, like, as they continue to develop and change, like, again, like their bodies are just developing so much at such an early age that, you know, sometimes we have to like work with them and just for some time and then assess as they get older.
Mm-hmm. So leaning into that more, let's talk gut health a little bit. You know, I'm assuming you recommend probiotics. You know, we've heard that a lot lately is kids probiotics. So what are things that you would recommend to promote good gut health for your children? And then, you know, types of probiotics that they should be on? Because I feel like there's so many these days.
Yeah.
And some of them contain more than you want to get, you know, like just not that great of ingredients. Because I know when I was researching a probiotic for my children, I was like down another rabbit hole and found that there are so many that have like sugar and just stuff that they don't need. So if you can just give us a little bit on that.
I love probiotics. Probiotics can be super helpful in kids. And I've seen tons of kiddos that have, you know, taken supplements and especially probiotics and it completely helped their microbiome. What we want to be careful of a lot of the times is like, some of the probiotics are just single strain, like Culturelle. It's a lot of times it's just Acidophilus, like Lactobacillus acidophilus. And that's only like one microbial species. And we have so many more. So sometimes what I'll say is let's mix it up. Like, you know, we might, and that's why I do stool testing because it really does help like narrow down what probiotic would be best. We have your normal flora-based probiotics, which is like your lactose, your bifidos, your beneficial, and they're usually broad spectrum, which are great ones to have. Then you have like your new like spore-based and bacillus strains, which actually help to rebalance and the growth of the gut as well. And so there's no real, like, I've never really met a probiotic that I've used so far that I hated, you know, like they're not, you know, there's some that are like, you know, better than others and some that do way more for the gut. It just really depends on that child's gut, but rotation is key because like, if you're just going to have your kid on the same probiotic for like a year, you're just giving those same strains over and over and over again. And that could definitely mess up the microbiome a little bit because there needs to be a happy balance. So if your kid doesn't have like yeast overgrowth and issues, you could do things like, you know, fermented foods, you know, resistant starches, polyphenol foods, like your bright colored fruits and vegetables and beans and stuff. Like you could do it that way too. But probiotics could be, I love them. It just really depends on that child and how they're going to respond. I've only had about maybe five kids that anytime they've ever been on a probiotic, they've actually regressed. And it's a very like small percentage of kids that that's happened to. And it's usually that their guts are just such in a like bad spot that just the probiotics just don't settle well with them by any means. We've tried multiple ones. So usually we'll do like different types of foods and different ways of feeding the microbiome than using probiotics.
That's good that I've actually never heard that you need to swap them out. Because like you said, the strain, the certain strains of the certain probiotic that you have. So that's interesting because I think we're coming up on 1 year of my kids being on this specific brand. So I'm already like, okay, new probiotic.
Yeah. And it's about diversity. So like some parents will do like every other day, a different, you know, maybe bacillus versus like broad spectrum and stuff like that. And just like try to mix it up or, you know, and it also depends on the kid and their food. So like, you know, I'm a firm believer in like, if we can get it through food, like fabulous, like that's what we want to try to do. But if not, like we have those supplements now that are available to us to like get things on the right track. So like when I'm doing testing, sometimes these kids' guts are so far to the right, I could put them on the most perfect diet on the face of the planet and nothing is going to bring it back until I do some of that supplementing and gut work. Like, you know, it's just not feasible all the time to just expect that a perfect diet will then take somebody's gut who's so far to the right and just put it back on the track and be like, okay, you're good to go now. It just doesn't happen. And I haven't seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's other practices we have to go with.
Yeah. We have to kind of work, you know, sometimes because what happens is when you don't have enough beneficial microbial species, like if your lactose, bifidos and stuff are low, all of a sudden those pathobiones, those ones that are, we call pathogenic, it's like a weed in a garden. Mm-hmm. If you have a beautiful garden of all your flowers and then you go away for the week, if you don't tend to those weeds and keep them in check, they're going to take over the whole entire garden and kill your flowers. That's exactly what happens in the microbiome too with those pathobiomes. So we have to constantly sometimes maintain and weed the garden and see what's going on so that we can make sure that we have it, you know, it comes back every year and blooms and stuff and it doesn't get killed.
Ooh, that's good. I like that. I've never heard it put that way. And yeah, that I love that. Okay, so I'm going to try not to butcher these words, but I heard you talk about this on a podcast, and I thought it was so interesting because I had no idea anything about this. So I wanted you to, if you can, explain epigenetic and nutrigenomics. Yes, nutrigenomics. How, like what they are, what each of those are, and then the correlation to autism and ADHD. Because I know when you said your son was going through, or when he was being diagnosed with autism, his genetic testing came back fine and clear, like you said. And so if you can explain these two and their correlation too.
So when I took Keegan to a geneticist, they were doing gene mapping. So they were looking for specific genes that we do know have a correlation with autism spectrum disorders. So very similar to like Fragile X syndrome. Like if you're born with Fragile X syndrome, you will likely have autism because of how that deletion or mutation occurs in the body and how it affects the brain and growth, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at epigenetics and nutrigenomics, that's like, it's still kind of, I want to say like in an infancy stage, like we're still trying to figure out how that plays a role. So with like epigenetics, I'm sure people, and if anyone's listening or you've ever heard of like MTHFR, mm-hmm. you know, methylation cycle, Dr. Ben Lynch made this very well famous. Plus, you know, we have like COMT mutation, we have GSH, which is like your glutathione pathways. So we could have a genetic abnormality that occurs that causes X, Y, and Z, you know, so like if you have a Fragile X syndrome, it can cause autism spectrum disorder. With like epigenetics and nutrigenomics, epigenetics is basically looking at other types of mutations and saying, how does this play into a cause of a condition? So like with MTHFR, if methylation is altered, this is your ability to detox properly, and you accumulate and bioaccumulate toxins because your methylation cycle isn't working correctly, that could be a cause of a medical condition. And we do know with methylation and high homocysteine levels, there's over 60 conditions associated with that. That's more of like your epigenetics. Mm-hmm. With nutrigenomics, that's more or less how you're converting nutrients in the body. So like vitamin A, we take, you know, it's how we take beta carotene that you eat from like a carrot and convert it into its normal state of what's needed in the human body. Sometimes people have a gene that interrupts that, or they have mutations that don't let the beta carotene convert to like palmitate, mm-hmm. you know? So that's why if you take a supplement and you have positive markers for vitamin A issues, we would say, don't take anything with beta carotene, take something with palmitate in it. It's more of the active form because you can't convert beta carotene correctly. So those are things that are still kind of in the infancy stages, unfortunately, just because we're just still learning about the genome and how all that plays in, because you could have one gene. I mean, we get 27,000 genes from our parents, then we're pulling one of those 27,000 genes and trying to correlate it to other health medical conditions. That's a lot. That's hard to do. Mm-hmm. So we do know that we do have some of those genes that can play a role with autism, but it's not going to ever be like my first course of action. Because with something like methylation, we need nutrients. You need your vitamin D, you need your zinc, you need your B12, your folate, you need all those to work properly. So if you're deficient, your methylation cycle is not going to work anyway. So I don't really, you know, so I try to my best to make sure that we get the foundation pieces right. And then we can always look at genetics later on and say, okay, this is where we need to kind of focus a little bit on for the future. Cause now that you know that maybe you have issues with converting something or you're deficient in something, we know that for the future to make sure that we're getting the proper nutrients in that person.
Mm. Yeah, that's so good. Because I myself am going through a thyroid journey right now of really more along like the functional side of things and just trying to like heal and get my body working properly. And that's something that I've been learning a lot about with myself just through my doctor is the methylation process and how like, okay, I can be eating foods that are rich in iron, but maybe my body just isn't processing it and using it. You know,
yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different, like, especially for thyroid with like iron. I mean, if you have H. pylori, which is in the upper GI, that loves to eat iron. So that could like kill your iron. If sometimes you have like a lot of kiddos that I test, they actually have sometimes like really high levels of iron, which means that they're having issues with inflammation and they're actually not utilizing the iron as best as they should be, because now it's just free floating and it's causing too much inflammation in the cells. Mm-hmm. So iron is one of those ones that could be such a wonky marker.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm finding out a lot about it all.
You'll do another deep dive.
Yes. Yep. Oh, I got like 10 open right now. 10 deep dives going all the time. Okay, so the last thing I really wanted to touch on with you is, as an herbalist, you have a very like naturopathic way of treating illness that I've seen like on through your Instagram and stuff like that. What are ways that you like to go about treating things such as like the common cold, stomach bug, seasonal allergies? And I'm asking these things because these are things that, like, you know, children get a lot. And, you know, your child has a low grade fever. Well, we're taught to, okay, give them Tylenol, ibuprofen. So what are some alternative methods that, like I said, are more on the naturopathic side?
Yeah, I mean, and it really depends on what you're dealing with. I mean, you know, there are times that, like, you know, I think it was last year, like one of my kiddos, like, you know, sometimes I'll keep Motrin on hand. Like, I won't have Tylenol, but Motrin, I'm like, I will have on hand in case of emergency. My son had like 105.7 fever, and I was doing everything I could to just like, you know, work him through it, you know, supporting him and stuff. And it just got to a point where he was like delirious. Like, he just and I was like, okay. And I gave him Motrin and it went down and he fine and he was able to continue. So I do work, you know, what we try to train our families is to treat the symptoms, not the temperature, not, you know, things like that, because we want to just make sure someone's comfortable too. And obviously if they're getting such a high fever, that could be a big problem and how they're feeling. So we want to just be, you know, and every parent's going to have a different, you know, level of like, oh, I'm okay with this versus not okay with it. And that's perfectly fine. Like, no one's ever saying you can't reach for something to use if you feel uncomfortable. I love like detox baths and stuff, and you could do them when kids are sick with fevers, like with like catnip, Epsom salt, things like that. Essential
oils. We do
oils,
Epsom salt really, a lot.
Yeah, those are great to do.
My daughter loves them. She asks for them. I'm like, I don't know if you feel a difference after doing these, but I'm all for it because, yeah.
Well, believe it or not, a lot of kids love the Epsom salt baths because most kids are deficient in magnesium. Mm-hmm. And so when you do Epsom salt, it does give a lot of magnesium. So they actually feel better, like pains, aches, pains, symptoms, and even sleepiness. They'll actually feel better and more well rested when they get that magnesium from the Epsom salt baths too. So those are great. I love teas. Like catnip tea is great for fevers too. I use a lot of like natural, like things like quercetin, vitamin C. Those are great, like antihistamines for kiddos, mule and garlic ear drops. Like my youngest, after dealing with Keegan and all of his major ear infections, anytime his little brother was on the brink of getting an ear infection, or I thought he was getting an ear infection, I was doing mule and garlic ear drops. I was doing purification oil on the back of his, on the bottom of his ear, like rubbing that on and taking him to the chiropractor, and nothing ever turned into a full-blown ear infection that he needed antibiotics for.
Wow.
You know, fevers, there's so many different ways, like, you know, cold, wet socks. Yeah. I've done onions in the bottom of the feet with socks, which are great. I've done black cumin seed oil is great on the feet too as a rub. Like I said, catnip, and they do make like homeopathy, like Highlands has like fever reducer and stuff like that, that doesn't, you know, and that work has always just worked well for us, you know, in any situation. You know, we do the cold wet baths, we do skin to skin when they were little, things like that. And, you know, now they're older, so, you know, they're a little bit more like, all right, can you put the onions in the sock now? You know, and it's like, and it's so funny because both of my kids had the flu right before Christmas this past year. And, you know, my house literally just smelled like onion stew because I had one in this room with
things
onions
hanging from the ceiling. You're just concocting all of
Yeah, one in the other room, and I had to open up the windows because it was just stinking up the whole house. I mean, even the dog was like, what is going on here? But yeah, I mean, a lot of those things people poo-poo, you know, Oscalo is great for flu and stuff. Genexa has great, you know, flu stuff. You know, there's so many things that are out there to do. Liposomal vitamin C, Beekeepers has an amazing vitamin C liposomal. So it's hard. It's a hard understanding. Like, you know, I usually just say like, focus on one disease, like one sickness area, and like, you know, get your regimen down. But, there's so many helpful people out there that can walk you through and tell you other things to do. But, you know, sometimes it's just seeing what's going to work best for your kiddo too, and what they're going to be willing to take. So like, working with kiddos on the spectrum, they're not all going to be like, yeah, I'll take some vitamin C and put onions on the bottom of my sock. But you know, there's other things that we can do as well.
Yes. So that leads me to also your practice, which is biomedical healing for kids. You also have an ebook with a 31-day allergen-friendly meal plan for kids. So can you talk about those two things a little bit for people listening, and if they would like to go to your website to learn more about those?
Yeah. So yeah, my practice is biomedical healing for kids. Biomedical means like alternative functional approaches to, and integrative mostly. Like, you know, there, I have no problem using Western medicine when we absolutely need to. But if we can do it and treat it naturally, well, that's what we're going to do. So I work with, you know, mostly kids with autism, ADHD. Then I also work with kids with like eczema, skin issues, gut issues, like severe constipation, and really those like complex pediatric cases that nobody wants and nobody really truly understands. So I have, you know, I do one-to-one consultations with patients. And then I also have an ebook because I have a lot of people that follow me from all over the world. And when you're new to this journey, I wanted to have like a book about detoxing and stuff, because that's what I get asked all the time about gut health and nutrition and detox. So I created this ebook to, it's basically like a mini course. It basically will walk you through the process of understanding how to set up your four pillars of detox and your foundations. And I have like a checklist so that parents can like follow along and make sure that they're like, you know, focusing on what's more important, because as you know, we were discussing going down rabbit holes. Mm-hmm. These parents are going down so many different rabbit holes, and a lot of these rabbit holes have absolutely nothing to do with their kid. So when you're wasting so much time and energy and focus on things that don't even matter, and I've done that too, like wasted like a month researching something that had nothing to do with my kiddo. You know, so that's why we start with your foundations, working your way up to like the diet, nutrition, understanding. I have a food pyramid with all the foods that you can kind of try to focus on, herbs to focus on. Then we talk about the gut health, the nutrition, and then we talk about detox a little bit and how you can start that process, but safely, so that we can, you know, make sure that your kiddo is, you know, ready. Like we talk about my priming stages, which is like getting the body ready to even detox. And a lot of times that doesn't even involve supplements yet. That could be movement, lymphatic drainage, you know, jumping on a trampoline, you know, those types of things, red light therapy, castor oil packs, you know. So we're going to talk about all those different things. So it helps parents kind of navigate this very complex world to find that balance of, okay, if I just make this one step forward, at least I'm making one step forward in the right direction so that I can start making a change in my child's life. Mm-hmm. It also came with a 31-day meal plan for breakfast and lunch, mostly because, you know, dinners are always kind of scattered, but people can take from lunch too. But what I found was a lot of parents really didn't know how to create a meal for a kid, or like how a plate should kind of look. So, and it's hard to try to find something that's dairy, gluten, corn, and soy free. So I created this with a group of amazing interns that I have. I love taking interns. So if you're a dietitian or a potential dietitian, I love taking interns.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, they love to help put these together. And it really did help a lot of families start to find other real fun, kid-friendly things that they could give their kiddos for breakfast or lunch, so we can get that diversity going. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, we're routine individuals and we love to eat the same thing a lot of the times, and we need to start diversifying as much as we can.
Yes. And so this is www.biomedicalhealingforkids.com is your website.
Yep.
Perfect. And that's where you'll find your ebook and how to work with you and all your resources. I mean, you have so much on that website. Like, you can't miss a single piece of information you're looking for, because you have so much.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a big world. There's a lot of info.
There is. Yeah. And I think you place it great. You know, like you said, you can land on a million rabbit holes, but you kind of put it on a straight line for people. And I think that's great. That really helps parents get to solving their children's problems. So, yeah, that's awesome. And social media, you're on Instagram for sure.
I'm on Instagram. I definitely have Instagram. I have TikTok. I'm not big on TikTok. I tried. It's hard. TikTok is a tough platform.
I feel like you're either one or the other. Like everyone that I talk to, they're like one or the other is their main one.
I don't like TikTok too much. But yeah, I'm on Instagram at Biomedical Healing for Kids. And I do have a private Facebook group, same Biomedical Healing for Kids, which I created first. And that was back when I started really working with Keegan to showcase what his progress was and to share research and information I was finding, because I needed an outlet. I needed an outlet. And at the time, I just wasn't big into Instagram. But yeah, I needed an outlet to share what I was learning, what I have found, and Keegan's progress. And then that's how biomedical healing just kept evolving into what it is today.
Yes. Well, Greer, I think what you're doing is amazing. I love following you. I hope everyone loves this episode just as much as I have. I've loved this episode, and I'm so excited to share it. And thank you so much for giving me your time and coming on here to share your knowledge.
Thank you so much for having me again. I enjoy everything that you do and, you know, helping me get more of the message out, and our story and progress and other people's progress is really how we start making a difference for kiddos, because, you know, most people just won't listen to us. So it's helpful. Thank you.
100%. Well, thank you.
As always, I appreciate you all so much for listening. My goal is for these episodes to at least help one person in some aspect of their life. So if you like what you hear, don't forget to follow, like, subscribe to the show, as well as follow us on social media @InsideVoicePod. Thanks.